The church, the scriptures, and the liturgy all love the number 40. We talk about that here every now and then. 40 years is a biblical lifetime. So they spent 40 years wandering in the wilderness before they reached the promised land. So that 40 years is in between their delivery from slavery in Egypt to their delivery into the land of Israel. And it took their whole lives. And the metaphor for us is that this journey that we're on, this pilgrimage that we're on to the kingdom of God, the new Israel, the eternal Israel, it takes a life. And so throughout the liturgical year, there are various seasons of 40. There are 40 days of Lent. There are 40 days between Easter and Ascension Thursday. And there are 40 days between the Feast of the Transfiguration and this feast, the Triumph of the Holy Cross. And those two things are kind of tied together by those 40 days, the Transfiguration and the Exaltation of the Cross. And both of those have two feasts in the liturgical year. One is during Lent. I think it's the third Sunday of Lent, where we always read from the Transfiguration. And it's an historical event that happened with Jesus right after he had predicted his coming passion and death. And of course, his disciples, voiced by Peter, no, we won't let that happen to you. They're resistant to that news. Jesus, in his humanity, is struggling with that himself, and he mentions it on several occasions to his disciples, and they're horrified at the thought. And so the Transfiguration, in which he shows them his glorified body after the death and resurrection, is there to give them encouragement. And so now in August we celebrate the Feast of the Transfiguration, and that is tied to not Good Friday like the other Feast of the Cross, that's about the horror, the death, the loss, and the grieving, as opposed to this feast, which is about the glory of the cross, the throne of the cross. Jesus says, just like Moses lifted up the serpent in the desert, so must the Son of Man be lifted up on the cross of horror and shame and death, which is also at the same time his throne of glory. And it's kind of summarized by that hymn that St. Paul quotes in that second reading. For he who was God did not deem equality with God something to be grasped, but he emptied himself, taking the form of a slave, being born in human likeness. And it was thus that he humbled himself, even to the point of death, death on a cross. And because of this, God highly exalted him, so that at his name every knee must bend in the heavens, on the earth, and under the earth. And when Paul writes that, his listeners, and it was often proclaimed in the liturgies, his listeners would recognize the irony there, because the emperor, Caesar, proclaimed himself as a god. And he commanded that everyone in the empire genuflect to him, to his name. And if you didn't do that, you could be punished even unto death. And so here's the King of Kings, God, who has taken the lowest place. Instead of demanding and grabbing for the highest place like the emperor did, he's taking the lowest place. And precisely because of that, the Father exalts him so that not just in the Roman Empire, but in the heavens and all over the earth and under the earth. In other words, the cosmos genuflects to his name. And the irony, too, is the fact that somehow this reveals God. Jesus is the ultimate revelation of who God is, and it looks like the cross. Because God, who is exalted above all, takes the last place. God is humble. And in the Trinity, they're dying for each other all the time. They're giving themselves. It's this self-offering. And then it's summed up in that gospel. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, even though the world deserved it, And even though in our human sense of justice, we could understand why God would be so angry, he would condemn the world, and yet that's not how God acts. God sends his Son into the world so that they might be saved. God is presented in the Old Testament kind of like a loving parent, a father. And sometimes parents have to punish their children. And it doesn't mean that they don't love them. And it doesn't mean that they've given up on them. It's in the hope that they would be redeemed from that. A good boss does evaluations for his or her employees, not to set up a situation so that they can be fired, but that they could be told what is expected and they could make some changes, some adjustments, and become better employees. So God, this loving parent, sends these serpents that bite the people and some of them die. And certainly there's a lot of suffering, even those who didn't die. And so they come back to Moses and they said, "We've sinned against God and against you." They're repentant, you know. Redemption. The punishment worked. It didn't condemn the people. It just brought them back to the truth. And so God tells Moses to fashion this bronze serpent and hold it up, and anyone who looks at that serpent will live. And so Jesus, who symbolizes in his taking on all of our sin, in the same way that snakes, the serpent in the Genesis story of the Garden of Eden, snakes kind of symbolize evil, and because they're dangerous and some of them are poisonous unto death. And yet at the same time, snakes are also a symbol of resurrection, because every year they shed their skin. It's almost like they get a new life, and they shed the old, and then there's this new. Isn't that strange that this deadly snake, a symbol of evil and death, is also a symbol of life? And so the irony of the cross is that this instrument of death also became the instrument of resurrection and life. And so Christ must be lifted up onto this instrument of death, which is also his throne of glory. And that's so much a part of the Christian life that every time we celebrate liturgy, we process a cross in the procession. And we always put it up in our churches on the back wall, because there's something about looking at him on the cross and appreciating the irony. You know, we're grateful for what he did for us, but we're also meditating on our own involvement. Jesus said, and we had this just this past Sunday, "Anyone who is not willing to take up their own cross and follow me is not worthy of me." And so we're meditating on how, what are my crosses in life? And life throws enough crosses at us, we don't have to go looking. And yet, there's this invitation to find crosses too. To do voluntary suffering, to fast, to abstain from sin. We make resolutions about daily prayer, becoming more sacrificial ourselves, more like Christ. And here in the liturgy, we lay our lives on the altar along with Christ to become self-offerers ourselves, to become more like him. In that wonderful irony that to lose oneself is to gain oneself.